I'm shunning you.
Unshun, please.
Unshun.
Thank you.
Hi, Micah. Welcome to the show. Reshun.
Well, I'm actually not Micah. I am Micah's desk partner, and Micah wants you to know that he doesn't understand why you're shunning him, but he's very hurt by it.
Unshun. I don't know either. Reshun. But it would make a terrible, unshun. It would make a terrible podcast if I shunned you.
That's true. And also, I can't stay here. I need to go, and Micah wants to come back on. And so, yeah, that's just, none of that's going to work. We're okay. Going to have to just do this episode.
Okay. Let's unshun or de-shunned completely.
Thank you. Wow. I could almost feel that energy of the de-shun. It just kind of fell throughout. I love that because that kicks things off. This is an episode full of conflict, and it's not as dark as the last episode, where the conflict was obviously a bit more
heavy,
very not fun. And this conflict is kind of fun. Andy, or Drew, as it were, is back.
He gets to be Drew for like 3 seconds, and like Pam agrees to it. And she's like, oh, okay. And everyone else is like, yeah, no.
Hey, Andy, how are you, man?
Good. Drew, you can call me Drew.
No, I'm not going to call you that.
I can't control what you do. I can only control what I do.
Andy.
Drew.
What would your Drew name be, Tiff?
I guess Tiffany.
Yeah, that's true.
That would be weird. It just sounds weird even saying that.
No one has ever come up with a good nickname for me. I mean, my name's already kind of short, and so if someone called me Mike, I'd be very weirded out, but I guess that could be a nickname for me.
You could just be Mai.
Mai, there you go, Mai. Hey, Mai. Actually, that's kind of cute. I might have to hold on to that.
Or Ka.
Call me Ka.
Hey, I'm Ka.
Jim, could you please inform Andy Bernard that he is being shunned?
This is the start of the conflict, and it makes sense why the shunning is taking place.
Well, basically, Dwight is shunning Andy. Why? I don't even know.
We know this. It's because Dwight lost his job because of Andy tattling on him, and Dwight came back at the same time that Andy left for anger management. So Dwight hasn't had a chance to sort of pay him back for all of the stuff that Andy has done.
I mean, obviously there's been some tension between Andy and Dwight because of their rivalry for the love of Michael. And so I could see Dwight kind of being on edge with Andy being there. And we just saw him kind of pepper spray him in the face when he came back. So we know that Dwight is not a fan of Andy. And Jim takes this opportunity to do this wonderful prank on Dwight. It's the exact right caliber of prank in response to this ridiculous shunning. And Jim just decides to say his own things instead of what Dwight asked him to say to Andy, because they're all standing right there and it's completely ridiculous.
Andy, Dwight says welcome back and he could use a hug.
Okay, tell him that that's not true.
Dwight says that he actually doesn't know one single fact about bear attacks.
Okay, no, Jim, tell him bears can climb faster than they can run. Jim, tell him!
Yeah, he's so quick. And this is just a pure example of the childhood silliness that they get into, because I can remember doing this exact thing with my siblings. I think anybody who has siblings can identify to some extent with this, and that's what makes this so funny, because on its own it's like, these are adults doing this nonsense, but when you see the way that Jim twists it so that Dwight gets frustrated because he's not saying what Dwight wants him to say, that's it's perfect. Mwah, chef's kiss.
The main meat of this episode is there is safety training going on because of an incident that happened in the warehouse, and so Michael decides to bring all of the office workers downstairs.
We are going to listen in on Daryl's presentation to the warehouse, and if I know Daryl, it's gonna be zoppity.
I love, as Daryl is going over the forklift, and the one thing he asks, he says, quiz, you know, like, Mike, should you drive the forklift? And Michael's response is,
I can and I have.
No.
It's so funny how frustrated Daryl is, how Michael just does not stop because he's trying to display that authority over Daryl the entire time. Like, I'm above your safety training and what you would tell me to do, because as soon as you tell me what to do, then I'm not your boss anymore. And so Michael's going about this the whole wrong way, but I do kind of understand where that struggle and that back and forth for volleying for authority comes from. But it's extremely frustrating because the stuff Daryl is talking about is actually very serious. I mean, Micah, 10 people lose their arms to bailers every year. 10.
Dwight loves the bailer and is like cheering it on, which is wonderful. This is one of those times where, you know, we talk about how the scenes in the, not in the break room, but in the conference room can be sometimes funny where we've got sort of overlapping taking place. Mm-hmm. This is another one of those scenes where multiple actors are allowed to sort of do their thing. They're all communicating. They're shouting over the top of each other suddenly. And it just is so much comedy because of that, especially because I love the way it's a very non-threatening way that Michael is just simply disregarding everything that anyone is saying. You know, you can approach those situations aggressively, but Michael's almost just plugging his ears without plugging his ears on everything everyone's saying. And it frustrates Daryl and it frustrates Lonnie.
The sea monster.
Yeah, the sea monster. It's so funny seeing how they're like, what is wrong with this guy? Because you're also wondering it too. It's like, is he not hearing one single doggone thing they're saying? And he's not. He's not hearing them. And that's because he has decided what he's decided. And also, you notice that he's making so much eye contact with the camera. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, it's all on display, him trying to be the cool person here. And yeah, I mean, I think if I was in front of the camera, I wouldn't want people to know that I couldn't use the forklift or the baler or whatever it happens to be.
Especially if you're the boss, right?
Yes.
Like, you would think that boss means that I have access to everything, but it's untrue. In this situation, it's more about who is qualified to operate the dangerous machine.
Yes, her is qualified to work a dangerous machine. You are not.
Is it Pudge? Is it Madge?
No, it's always been Madge.
Okay.
We get a very serious Kevin coming in here, which gives us another fun little plot.
How many people a year do you think get their arms cut off in a bailer?
$5 says it's over 50.
Kevin, whenever he talks about gambling, is not goofy.
Ooh,
the goofy is just gone from him. And the way he talks to Jim and brings up how bored he's been since March Madness hasn't been happening, and they start all of this kind of over under betting on things around the office. And Kevin is just so serious the whole time. He is on it. I can't help but buy this, the whole Kevin theory of him being this kind of smart gambler, possibly embezzling from the company. I don't know, but it's so strange to see when Kevin loses the goofiness and actually gets serious about something. I mean, I guess we could say that that's because gambling and the kind of stuff that he gets into, that's his passion, you know, but I don't know. It is. It's one of those really fun fan theories that, even though I know it's probably not true, it's probably not actually written to the script there, I love that it exists because so far we've seen things that have nothing but proven it true.
It's interesting to me sort of how everybody else is almost, I don't know if they're unaware or they just accept it or what the deal is, but people just seem to kind of let him do his thing when it comes to this, because most of the time, well, I mean, it's whenever he's around other people that we see.
I have a theory. I just got one. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, let's hear it.
It's the whole thing with the cameras again. What if Kevin actually is kind of more of a serious person, but when he's nervous in front of the cameras, he gets goofy and weird?
That could be it. Yeah, because he's at his weirdest and most awkward whenever he's doing talking heads.
Mm-hmm. Or when like it's more focused on his like attention, like it gets on him and then he gets like flustered and weird about it.
Unless you give him a big jar of M&Ms.
But even then, that's weird. It's like, oh, I don't know what to do. I'm going to stuff M&Ms in my face, right? But every other time, I mean, at this moment, he's just whispering to Jim, like in the back of the crowd. I don't think he's thinking the camera's kind of like focused in on him, right? He's not making any eye contact with the camera. He's completely ignoring it being there. Maybe when in these serious moments, we're seeing the real Kevin.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that theory. Thinking about the camera and how it changes the way that people act has just completely flipped this show on its head for me in some ways. And time and time again, I have to remind myself of that, that that's taking place.
I mean, that's the way I am in front of a camera. I can't possibly make a normal smiling face. I look like a total monster. I can't find a face that looks like a natural face. Ever.
Like, please, if you're going to take a photo of me, wear an invisible cloak first.
Make sure
I have no idea you're around.
Yeah, because there's no way that I will ever look like myself if someone else is taking my picture. It just can't possibly happen. So I could just completely imagine the idea of, you know, film cameras being on you all the time and just freaking out, being like, just like running away or being goofy and weird.
I don't want to be in this. It'd be kind of funny if there is a character that we don't even know. I mean, we did have that one that we kind of didn't know about. Maybe that character just did not like to be on camera.
Yeah.
So they were always just hiding whenever the camera
was. Yeah, maybe she didn't sign the release form, so she left.
that might be it, too. I do want to note, I would love to play this kind of betting game. Just random things.
Oh,
just
I know. It
all
sounds
sorts
so
of
much
things.
Fun. It brings that fun back into the office, just like we had with Office Olympics.
Yeah.
And we see Pam reacting to it that way, too. It's just like, oh, we're back to this kind of everyone's in the office doing stuff together and having fun, and Toby gets in on it. And
she calls Karen's technique smart yeah, at one point.
It just, I really, this is totally echoing of the camaraderie and the Office Olympics, and it's Michael and Dwight are off busy doing something else, and they're all just jovially getting together and doing this goofy thing, and everyone has their fun, different bets. We get one with Kelly describing Netflix.
So then the next movie moves to the top of the queue. So number 5 becomes number 4, number 6 becomes number 5, number 3 becomes number 2, et cetera, et cetera. And let's just say that I just sent back Love Actually, which was awesome. And they sent me Uptown Girls, which is also awesome. But guess what? Now I want to see Love Actually again, but it's at the bottom of the queue. Oh no, what do I do?
Plus all the little sub bets that go along with that one. The beautiful one with Creed and the
potato, right?
Potato. Oh, and I love that Toby's in on it. And he's like, I found a potato.
Creed is eating an apple. I found a potato.
We get a nice little taste of everyone around the office. We go on a little, like, betting tour.
I don't know this place as well as I thought I did. I'm getting cleaned out.
After the office people are downstairs in the warehouse, Michael brings the warehouse people up to show them how dangerous it could be to work in the office. And Toby's tasked to give this presentation, and he makes it totally boring.
Totally Toby.
It just becomes, as Daryl would say, nerfy. It just displays all the nerfy aspects of office life. And this hits Michael really hard because Daryl very much insults his entire life and says that essentially you're not a real man if you don't do work, like hard hands-on work.
That's what we've been trying to tell you, Mike. It's serious down there. We do dangerous stuff, man. This is shenanigans, foolishness, nerf ball. You live a sweet little nerfy life.
Again, in front of the cameras, and also just as a person, that clashes with who Michael sees himself as. And I think that he's already sort of on edge because Toby's giving the presentation and thinks that that's probably not going to turn out great. But also, I do wonder if he's maybe a little bit already prepared in a way, like, oh boy, I hope that they can come up with something that makes this job seem to be just as important as the job that takes place in the warehouse. And that's the thing, is that Michael is basing the importance of the job on the danger that they face as opposed to something else. The value that he's taking in this thing is the wrong sort of value, because all sorts of different jobs are beneficial in different ways. And if you're looking for world's most dangerous job as the method for determining how important your job is, well, buddy, you're in the wrong line of work.
I do find that the one serious part of this episode is kind of when they start talking about Pam comes into Michael's office and she says, it's really hard to demonstrate depression. And that's where Michael's like, oh yeah, they had all these cool visuals and we really can't demonstrate that. And that brings Michael up onto the roof and he's ready to do a performance of what depression means. And to me, this moment is kind of those, like, there's so much truth in the comedy of it. And then it kind of ends up, Michael's plan to demonstrate depression ends up kind of demonstrating his own depression a little bit. And it gets serious if you think about it a little bit too long. And that's another thing about the idea of you can't really demonstrate the mental issues or stresses and hardships that people go through, like when they get bored, when they get depressed, when they get seasonal affective disorder, which all of that stuff is very real, but it's not the you're going to get your arm cut off, like kind of glamorous. You can see it as a big problem and pinpoint it. It's, and that's why mental health and all of those things end up falling by the wayside, because they don't have the cool visuals. They don't have the, you know what I mean? They don't
have the flashy,
like, oh, this, you know, let's stop this cause because there's a giant baler over there about to get your arm. And it's like, the weather makes me sad, you know, but it's like, yeah, but that really does hurt.
I mean,
people.
That affects your, yeah, that affects your whole life. That is hurtful. It can lead to horrible situations. I mean, we've seen, you know, people working in, you know, arguably safe jobs suffer from depression to a point where it becomes deadly. Mm-hmm. And that's no joke. Also, anybody who's ever had carpal tunnel or any other sort of RSI.
Office-related injuries.
Thank you. Anyone who has ever experienced the pain of those wrist injuries, those back injuries, etc., know that those are no small thing to sweat, that they are painful, and that they, again, you take those home with mm-hmm. you. When you leave from, you know, down in the warehouse and you walk away from the baler, then you don't have to worry about the baler chomping your arm off while you're sleeping or whatever.
Although Daryl is hurt in this episode.
This is true. Yeah, but that is
because that was Michael.
And that's why everybody there should get hazard pay for working with Michael Scott. But that's a whole separate issue.
But yeah, Michael ending up on the roof and his plan, which, oh, we could talk about, but I want to talk about the serious side first to kind of tie it in, is that it's like he's up on the roof, and when everyone's trying to like coax him down, it really is him feeling depressed about what his life means and what he's actually working for. And that's where the tension of this episode comes from, is that he's up on that roof and he is really feeling these depressed, doubtful feelings that he was just kind of planning on doing a performance of. And then all of a sudden it got super self-reflective. And I do love when Daryl gets a hold of the microphone and he can't figure out how to tell Michael to come down. You've got so much to live for. What about Jan? It's complicated. Like, they go back and forth, and Daryl comes out with,
"You're a very brave man. I mean, it takes courage just to be you, to get out of bed every single day knowing full well you gotta be you."
And that, I feel like, is one of those things that all of us have kind of been thinking for the last three seasons. Like, it takes a lot of courage to get up and be Michael Scott sometimes.
Amen. Yeah, just the things, the way that his brain works. You want to look at him and go, wow, it must be exhausting being you.
Yeah, and just how he tries so hard every single day, and then he has to wake up and do it all over again, and kind of like know that people think he is, you know, the way
inept,
everyone
capable.
Yeah, exactly. The way everyone reacts to him, and he has to face that, and it's depressing and it's hard. And it's like, yeah, Michael is kind of a champ for getting through that every single day, because at this point, he can't really help how he is. And we've seen why he is the way he is based on a lot of his childhood stories and traumas and situations. And that's how we also see his redeeming qualities. But the worst parts of his personality are really hard to wake up and do every day. And he does. He's Braveheart, man.
I Braveheart.
But yeah, that to me is the big, like, serious part of the episode. But can we talk about the tests that they do with Michael deciding he's actually going to jump off the building, and they decide to get some watermelons, right?
Yes, but actually, before we hit that, I want to step back a second, because before we started the episode, you and I were sort of talking about this, and one of the things that you had noted is that this felt like kind of a pretty compact episode.
Yeah,
you didn't have a lot of notes, and I also agreed with that. I think one of the things for me, the reason why I didn't have a lot of notes and felt like this was a compact episode, is because this is one of the episodes that's just ingrained in my head as an episode, like in all caps, an episode of The Office. Safety training sticks with me personally, and has always, because of Dwight, you ignorant slut.
Dwight, you ignorant slut.
And so many other things that take place in this, where it is that I just remember most of this episode. And so when it's all in my head, it's like I don't have as many new things to write down, new observations. I kind of know what's about to happen. And so, yeah, I think that was a big thing for me. And I'm curious because, too, there aren't a whole lot of side stories. It's kind of like the little betting thing is just a cute aside, but it's mostly about the safety training. But I'm curious, do you have that feeling about this episode as a whole? Does this episode stick in your mind?
Oh, yeah. I think that this is definitely like one of those outlier flagship episodes where you think about Office Olympics, you think about safety training, you think about boys and girls, like any kind of time that we're just in this building, we're in the day-to-day. Yeah, it might be a slightly special day, but we're here in the office and it's just everyone kind of interacting with each other. You brought up before the little quips back and forth, like when Dwight was trying to get everyone to go outside and everyone's like, oh, how's the weather? No, it's beautiful. Should I put on a short? Would I be okay in a sweater? Yeah, you're that, fine. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's, how about a short sleeve? How about a long sleeve tee? Right. Like those little quippy things back and forth. We're not focusing on really any specific relationship right now in the office. We have a lot of Michael in this, but he's the boss, so we understand that things get centered around him often. But we're not seeing any kind of little sidetracks of seriousness from everyone. It's more this general everyone acting as an ensemble in this episode. And that those episodes really feel like The Office to me. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's such a fluid, tight episode, and it stands on its own so well that you don't really need to think about it a ton. It's just enjoyable.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a nice episode to wash over you.
To wash watermelon pieces over you.
Wash those watermelon pieces that bounced off of the roof. Yes, this, you know, Michael and Dwight are figuring out how they're going to make this happen, making sure that the physics of the situation makes sense, which any normal person would tell you, no, that's not going to work. But we have Michael and we have Dwight. And so they decide to throw a watermelon off of the roof.
I'm glad they tested.
Thank goodness. Except it hits Stanley's car. And
it's a hate crime.
Michael brings up it's a lawyer that he has mentioned in the past. He's got to get the lawyer on the phone. And yeah, he's, you know, making sure that they can help with hate crimes, because there is, of course, the stereotype about watermelon and people of color. And
oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I didn't even get that. Wow.
And so to hit the car with a watermelon is not a good look. Not a good look.
Oh my gosh, I totally didn't even get that.
Well, you know, I kind of like that, Tiff. There's sometimes like where you as a person who is not a person of color and you don't see those things, it's like, oh, you know, this is a good thing that you didn't think of that, because that's just a dumb stereotype that has been used against us for a long time. And so I appreciate that.
Oh, man.
So because of the failed test and the hate crime, it's not often you get to start a sentence with that. They switch the watermelon. They switch the trampoline out for a bouncy castle.
I mean, and honestly, it looks like the bouncy castle would have been okay if he was able to make that jump. It reminds me of the big inflatable things from like buildings getting burned and you jump out of them onto them. So
it was a good idea. It's not quite designed the same way, and so maybe he would have broken a leg, but at least he would have survived, unlike the trampoline.
If he made it all the way to the bouncy house, I don't know. It looked pretty far, but...
That's true. That's true. You'd really have to run and jump for that.
I do like how it was supposed to be hidden from everybody, but the tops of the towers were poking out behind the hedge walls, and it is so funny that this pink castle turret is sticking out. Oh, it's so good. And Creed discovers it because he went behind the bush to go urinate outside, which it was like, you were just inside, Creed.
Hey, check it out. There's a castle over there.
Oh my God, there is a castle.
No, there's nothing to see over there, people. There's nothing to see.
They found the castle, Michael.
I really love how Michael redoes the performance a second time for the warehouse people because they didn't come out. Dwight forgot to invite them. And so he basically does a second showing, and Jim's reaction to that with the camera is just great. And I also kind of like seeing them outside in the sun.
Yes.
It was like different camera work out there, and it actually was a very nice day. Dwight wasn't lying. It's beautiful out.
And in a meta way, when we're talking about seasonal depression being an issue that they experienced, they got to go outside.
So, yeah.
And they looked up at their eyes were bathed in sunlight as they looked up to see their boss about to jump off of a roof onto a bouncy castle.
So he was really helping everyone.
Yeah, he helped them. He gave them light therapy, which is what you need for a seasonal depression.
Depression? Isn't that just a fancy word for feeling bummed out?
So I think that's pretty much wraps up the episode. Like we said, it was pretty tight. There's a very little.
That's what she said.
Oh, dirty one. That's dirty.
Oh. Aren't they all dirty?
Yeah, but some of them are just extra special. that's what she said. I did it to myself.
Oh, my God.
All right, so we should give out our Dundee this week.
Yes, I am excited about this week's Dundee, and also not excited because it's going to harm my bank account. this week's Dundee we're going to call the Bobblehead Award, and that's because Chirag, and it's at ChiragND over on Twitter, pointed out that Funko is that's the company that makes like figurines and other little fun pop
icon merchandise figures.
Perfect. Wow. Pop icon merchandise figures. Thank you. Are releasing some pop icon merchandise figures of The Office.
There's it took Michael. Them long enough. Like, oh
right.
My gosh.
How has it been this long?
How many years have gone by? And now it's finally like cult classic enough for them to release these. Amazing.
My aunt is a huge collector of these. I've got some friends who collect them. I've always wanted to, I don't have any little... I have few like figurine type things. You know, some people like collect stuff and it sits out and it's kind of fun. I don't have any of that. And I thought, oh, Funko will be the place that I can do that. But I've gone on in the past and nothing on there has been something that I've been into enough to really want them in my house. It's like these would not spark joy and I would end up getting rid of them in the end. However, now we've got Michael Scott with a World's Best Boss mug. We've got Dwight Schrute with his phone on his belt. We've got Kevin holding a pot of chili, Kevin's famous chili. We've got Daryl with a clipboard. There are two versions of Jim. One is when he is Facebook for Halloween. We've got Pam with her little hands crossed. And then there is also a two-pack available where it's Michael Scott without his suit top on. And he is sort of like pointing out, and poor Toby standing next to him with a suck on this rock.
What do you think? Which one would you buy first?
Okay. Ooh. So Kevin's famous chili makes me so sad. I think I would buy, oh man, it's definitely between Michael and Dwight. It's probably going to be Michael, World's Best Boss. And then I would buy Dwight like moments afterward. What I think is going to happen is that Funko is going to see how well these sell, and then they're going to start adding more characters because I want the whole, like they need to release an accountant set where it's just the team from accounting. I don't care if they ever release Ryan, but definitely get Kelly in there and some of the other characters that get added in later. So this is really exciting. I will genuinely happily, lovingly care for these little characters, and they will probably sit behind me on the little display area that I have for whenever I do video podcasts and stuff. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I think I'd go for Dwight first. I think I would definitely get Dwight. It's very good.
But that's the other thing too, is that I might go for the two pack because then I get Michael, but I also get that Suck on This Rock is so funny. And I once gave my partner, he thought it was a present, and then he opened it up and I had recreated the Suck on This Rock from The Office. It was such a beautiful moment that I wish I'd filmed, but for some reason I wasn't in the moment. Well, I didn't want him to know that I was, you know, pulling a prank. Guten prank. Anywho, Chirag, thank you so much for pointing this out. We did see some of our other listeners point to this later, but you were first, and we appreciate
And they already
you.
Won Dundee's, so...
And they, yeah, a lot of them already won Dundies. So we appreciate you pointing this out and for letting us know, and for listening. And also, they need to come out with a Funko that's just a Dundee, I think.
Ooh,
yes. That'd be kind of cool. So, Gerard, get on up here and accept your Dundee. Pew, pew, pew.
Congratulations. Woo. All right, everyone. Thank you again for joining us on another episode of Somehow I Manage. And you can go follow us over at tall_beats and tell us cool stuff that comes out about The Office and grab your own awesome Dundee. And you can rate and review and check us out and see us on The Incomparable. Chat with us in the Slack room, the conference room. If you don't know what that is, Google it. Can you Google that kind of stuff? I don't know. Find out.
Figure it out.
But next week, please come back and join us at The Office for Product Recall, which is an episode you're not going to want to miss.
Yeah, you can't miss it.
Yo, no, you try to miss it, but you certainly can't.
It's just there staring you in the face.
Oh my gosh. That's what she said.
There's a lot this time. That could also be what she said, frankly. I'm going to hit stop now.
Everything's wrong. The stress of my modern office has caused me to go into a depression.
Depression? Isn't that just a fancy word for feeling bummed out?
Dwight, you ignorant slut. Depression is a very serious illness. Over 32,000 people commit suicide every year, according to a 2004 study.
Is that the last year the data was available?
Yes. My head is in such pain and turmoil.
Don't do anything rash.
Dwight, where are the warehouse guys?
I didn't think you needed them for this part.
Okay. That's...
You said to just...
That's the whole point, dummy.
Okay, I'm on it.
Okay?